welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we'll discuss farm aid for specialty crop growers, ag labor, and tariffs with Congressman Josh Harder, who represents part of California's Central Valley. But first, here are this week's headlines. Corn producers and the ethanol industry made a last-ditch attempt to get authorization for year-round E15 included in a fiscal 2026 funding package. The proposal ran into opposition in the Senate, and the House GOP leadership ultimately agreed to set up a council of lawmakers to come up with a legislative solution, a group deemed the E15 Rural Domestic Energy Council. The goal is for the House to consider an ethanol bill later in February. Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Vaden took aim at fertilizer companies this week and teased that the administration could take future action to inject more competition into markets. Speaking on a webinar, Vaden directly called out Mosaic and Nutrien for duopoly. He said the administration will do everything it can to ensure that farmers have the fertilizer they need at a price they can pay. Fertilizer markets have particularly high levels of concentration. Canada's Nutrien and Florida-based Mosaic were responsible for more than 90% of North American phosphate fertilizer and potash production in 2024, according to FarmAction. Additional farm aid was left out of a fiscal 2026 funding package, but farm groups are continuing to call on Congress to pass relief for farm country. The Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, which represents growers of fruits, vegetables, dried fruit, tree nuts, nursery plants, and other products, is advocating for no less than $5 billion and a third of any relief package. However, the future for an additional aid package is uncertain. House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson says the Senate is taking the lead on the process, but it's not clear when there could be another legislative vehicle that could carry the agricultural funding. Congressman Josh Harder represents part of California's Central Valley, where many specialty crops are grown. We asked him what he's hearing from his district's growers.
I think our farmers clearly need the help. This has been a devastating last couple of years, even before the tariff wars. But I think ultimately the best answer isn't a handout. It's trying to address the root causes of why this is such a tough environment for farming. If we can actually get out of these trade wars, if we can deal with some of the cost of inputs that have just skyrocketed on feed and fertilizer and everything else, we can make farmers a lot more profitable. I think ultimately, any amount of money that is given from the federal government is not going to be enough. It's going to be a small Band-Aid, given just how devastating the last couple of years have been for ag.
And you mentioned some of those other factors, but specialty crop growers are also squeezed with rising labor costs, input costs, regulatory costs as well, just a lot on their plate. You know, how does this make the case, you know, more important? You mentioned longer term correction needed, but for some additional farm aid.
It's a real problem. I mean, in my area, a lot of the farmers are fifth, sixth generation farmers. My family started a peach orchard in 1850. My great-great-grandfather came out on a wagon train and started a peach farm in Manteca. And that's the history for most of the folks across our area. And the last years of chaos and uncertainty is meaning that a lot of these families that have been doing this for generations are at the brink of losing farms, and that it would be absolutely catastrophic for our entire region, of which agriculture is always the bedrock, and for our entire country and the food security that we need. Food security is national security, ultimately. So I'm all in favor of trying to make sure that we can get some temporary support. I think that's certainly needed. There needs to be some bridge payments, especially for specialty crops, but ultimately, that's not going to do much unless we can actually make labor better, if we can actually fix some of these input costs and ultimately get us out of this zero-sum trade wars, which are just killing a lot of our farmers.
Yeah, and you mentioned those trade wars. House Ag Committee Ranking Member Angie Craig from Minnesota is proposing legislation to curb the impact of President Trump's tariffs and provide more farm aid. I'm curious, you know, lots of specialty crop growers in your district, how they've been impacted directly by the president's tariffs.
It's been hard. I think really tariffs are killing the golden goose of our nation's food supply. We have a real exciting advantage in California, which is that our specialty crops are competitive with crops all across the world. So we export generally a whole lot of the almonds that we produce, a lot of the milk and cheese that we make. And yet, right now, it's hard to compete when we're trying to sell into to countries that have a 20, 30, 40% tariff onto the United States and then a 0% tariff onto some other country. We like to think that we have a lot of great quality that outbeats our international competitors. But ultimately, if you're going to pay 50% more for our products, it's not going to work out. And so ultimately, we need to make sure that we get out of this trade war and ensure that our farmers can be the fruit and nut basket of the entire world, and especially for our food and national security here at home.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Agriculture labor is a major issue for California agriculture. We asked Congressman Josh Harder if the administration's immigration enforcement has had an impact on farms in California's Central Valley.
You know, every single farmer that I know has a labor crisis. Folks are desperate, and it's great to see AI that's accelerating and, maybe some opportunities for productivity there. I don't see a whole lot of robots coming into a dairy farm and milking the cows. We need people, and we need to make sure that we have farm workers that can actually do this work and aren't actually dealt with the huge fear and uncertainty that is caused. The right fix is a bipartisan effort to make sure that our immigration system meets the needs of our farmers and our growers and the farm workers, of course, themselves. We've been working on a bipartisan solution, the Farm Worker Modernization Act, which would create a path to citizenship for folks. We've got Republicans and Democrats on board. But this is a tough environment politically to get something like that done. People are more interested in pointing fingers than actually getting to solutions. And the folks that are left holding the bag are ultimately our farmers, our farm workers, and of course, most of all, our consumers and our eaters and the folks that actually want these products to make sure that they continue to be affordable. And it's no secret that grocery prices are going up. And one of the big reasons for that is our farmers can't actually have the labor on the farm that they need.
Yeah, the administration is also implementing cuts to the H-2A wage rate to save farms on labor costs. I'm curious, what did you think of that proposal, of what they came out with?
I think it's the wrong idea. If you lower wages, you're going to get ultimately fewer workers. What we need is we need a comprehensive solution. We need something that looks at the entirety of the challenges to H-2A. One of the challenges is it's not even a year-round program. It's not like we turn our cows off during the summer. Why should it continue to be a seasonal program when many of the crops that we grow are year-round? And so we need to think a little bit more about what H-2A needs to look like in the 21st century. We need to make sure that we fix blue card and given a path to citizenship towards folks that have worked on the farm for a long, long time and are no threat to our national security. But also, how do we actually reform H-2A, bring more folks on, and make sure that we have the agricultural productivity that we need? So I think ultimately this is not going to fix any of the problems that our farmers are actually dealing with right now.
Yeah, and you recently introduced legislation on olive oil standards. Can you explain a bit of, what that would mean for both growers and the end consumers of the product?
Yeah, I think this is pretty simple. All this bill does is make sure that what's on the label is in the bottle. We have clear standards of identity for everything from 2% milk to peanut butter to mayonnaise. But we don't have it for olive oil. And that's a big deal because we have seen the American olive oil domestically really expand dramatically over the last couple of years, especially in California. We're making millions of gallons of olive oil across our area. It's a great crop because consumer demand is through the roof. But also it's drought resistant. And so some of the water challenges that we have in California are mitigated by olive oil. So it makes a ton of sense for our area. And even despite all that domestic growth, the vast majority of the olive oil that's consumed is coming from abroad, from Spain and Greece and Italy and elsewhere. And so having a clear standard of identity creates that level playing field. So our domestic consumers, which are already held to high standards, are able to make sure that they are able to compete with some of those international folks, which don't have very clear standards of identity that are regulated by law. So to me, this is a no-brainer. It's going to help our farmers. And of course, as a parent with two young toddler girls who eat their weight in bread and everything, including dipping it in olive oil, making sure that our farmers and our families are on the same page is be a big advantage for everybody.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Andrew Haneke looks at how the outcome of the midterm elections could influence the makeup of the House of Representatives. In this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Historically, the president's party loses seats in the House of Representatives during the midterm elections. This chart shows that trend, starting in 1990 with President George H.W. Bush through President Biden in 2022. There have only been two instances since 1990 where the president's party gained seats in the House during midterms. Those were 1998 and 2002. In 2002, Republicans lost seats but still kept control of the House. You can see that in every other year, the opposing party takes control of the House, and that includes President Trump's first term in 2018 when Democrats gained 40 seats. Lawmakers are working to try and get a farm bill done before the midterm cycle because it may end up being more difficult to get one passed after that. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Haneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions. Connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Welcome back. House leadership settled on creating an E15 Rural Domestic Energy Council this week after failing to come up with a legislative solution for year-round E15. We asked National Corn Growers Association President Jed Bauer if the action is kicking the can down the road for E15 in the future.
Well, ultimately what we're hearing now is they're going to punt this, so to speak, and move it into some task force so they can review it. Ultimately, this is truly a sad moment, not for corn farmers, but for all of rural America and farmers across our country. In a time that is as dire as it is now for all of agriculture, we brought forth a bipartisan bill with the help of the oil industry and the biofuels industry to save the government $6 billion. Help support the corn side of agriculture until we can get some other things done through the other commodities, and save consumers 25 cents a gallon. How sad is this? Truly seems like a cowardly attempt not to get something productively done for rural America. So obviously what they're saying is they're going to put this into a task force. They're going to review it, which we've done with the help of the White House. The White House put us together with oil, and we went through this and come to an agreement we could all live with. But now we're going to have to fight the battle again. And it seems like truly Congress does not want rural America to survive at this point. And I am so appreciative to all of our champions in Congress that stood beside us and advocated for us and did the interviews and spoke so highly of what this bill could do. We couldn't have done it without their help, but unfortunately, here we are again.
Yeah, and this comes as spoke with some of those Midwest lawmakers that spoke with House leadership yesterday. And, you know, they were kind of saying, you know, this really leans into President Trump's message of lowering gas prices, relying on domestic energy. You know, I'm curious, as we look ahead, it's obviously punted to February when that council will submit recommendations. But, you know, are you optimistic at all at that point that this still could find some bipartisan support to move forward?
I mean, I want to be. I truly do. This bill completely makes sense. And that's what is so frustrating. At a time when we talk about our national debt and we talk about the safety of our country and our nation, and this does helps provide all that. I don't know. It's truly sad. It's, you know, as we look at this and we look at the foreclosures and the bankruptcies rising in rural America, what does Congress think they're doing here? I don't get it. You know, we're going to continue to fight this battle. We have so many farmers that have been on the Hill. We actually had farmers asked to leave the Capitol yesterday because they were voicing their opinions louder than they would have liked. I mean, we're desperate. And, you know, we've tried to be nice. We've tried to find logical ways to work. And I don't know what else they can expect from us as growers. It's truly sad. And I had a meeting with the speaker himself, and he was frustrated that Doge had it pulled out last year. And here we are again. Man, we need some true leadership, and I don't know where it's coming from. Hopefully President Trump will weigh in. The secretary can weigh in again. It's a sad day for American agriculture.
And as you mentioned, a very sad day, but sources are saying this could be, you know, a do or die moment for year-round E15. I mean, do you agree on that sentiment?
Unfortunately, it's very possible. You know, when you bring the oil industry and the farmers and biofuel together and we come forth with this, I don't know what else you can expect. I mean, it is a true coalition that years ago you never would have been talking about. And yet here we are. And Congress can't get out of their own way.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. The recently released Dietary Guidelines for Americans call on Americans to eat real foods and fewer highly processed products. We asked Molly Van Loo with the International Fresh Produce Association how the recommendations could affect consumer demands for fruits and vegetables.
Well, the dietary guidelines were very clear once again that fruits and vegetables are a core component to dietary recommendations. So the challenge has always been that Americans don't follow the dietary guidelines largely. 1 in 10 Americans follow the previous fruit and vegetable recommendations, and they were also strong in how they recommended fruits and vegetables. So the work is really, how do we put in place the policies, promotions to ensure that Americans are changing their dietary patterns? There was a lot to like in the dietary guidelines when you think about what the barriers are to fruit and vegetable consumption. A big one of those is the share of the plate. Americans eat far too much added sugar and highly processed foods, of which added sugar is typically part of that. So the dietary guidelines kind of coming out strongly against highly processed foods was a really good step in the right direction. But again, it's about implementation and how do we ensure that Americans make these changes.
And I want to ask you as well, food is medicine, or the idea that, you know, a better diet can treat and prevent illness has been very important to Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I'm curious, you know, what you'd like to see from the administration on this.
Sure. So, I mean, our ultimate ask is that we make produce prescriptions a standard practice of clinical care, which essentially means healthcare pays for a produce prescription intervention the same way that it would a pharmaceutical intervention. We have seen good progress in this area in terms of states are taking advantage of what is called Medicaid 1115 waivers. And, you know, historically, that has been mostly kind of a blue state issue. And certainly with MAHA coming to the scene, it's becoming much more bipartisan. So you saw Oklahoma in 2025 move towards a Medicaid 1115 waiver. So we would really just like to see the administration continue to champion this. Ultimately, we would want to see Medicare cover it because it kind of is a trickle down. Once Medicare covers any sort of intervention, and so we would love to see the secretary really bolster support there. But we are anticipating from Congress soon a bill to be introduced to make produce prescription standard in the veterans health care system, which is huge. Obviously, it's a big system, but it's fully integrated. So we'll be able to get some really good data from the impact there.
And as we look ahead in February, House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson says that he'd like to move a Farm Bill 2.0 through the House Ag Committee. Curious what nutrition issues you'll be watching through that. And, you know, following some of those nutrition cuts in budget reconciliation, you know, is there any chance that Democrats are really going to come to the table and negotiate with him to move that forward?
That's the big question. But there really are important things within the nutrition title for fruits and vegetables. So obviously SNAP is always going to be something that's discussed, and we want to see more fruits and vegetables in SNAP, no doubt about that. But, you know, two important areas that I think can have and does have bipartisan support is a procurement program. So as you know, USDA buys billions of dollars of food every year, but only a handful of fresh produce commodities typically, just because of the way that it works, both with how it moves throughout the system and then often being a lowest cost bid, which can kind of box out a lot of different U.S. grown fresh fruits and vegetables. So we would love to see in the Farm Bill some work to transition to a values-based procurement system that would just allow access to a broader variety of fresh fruits and vegetables that are U.S. grown. And then the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program, which people, it is in schools, so people don't always associate it with the Farm Bill, but that is a highly effective program that gets fresh fruits and vegetables to elementary schools. And it's super popular, oversubscribed, and it fits kind of perfectly in this MAHA era. So we really would love to see more resources into fresh fruit and vegetable program. It's been studied so much.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Andrew Honecke looks at updated crop insurance indemnity payments. And this week's Map It Out.
Crop insurance indemnities are typically paid to farmers when their revenue for a crop falls below the level covered by their policy. That happens because of low yields or drops in market prices or a combination of both. This map shows insurance indemnities paid to growers on a county-by-county basis for the 2025 crop year. Some policies also cover pasture and rangeland, providing payments to growers based on the amount of rainfall. Pasture insurance covered 320 million acres in 2025. Payments are the highest where crop prices are down or there have been extreme weather events. That includes severe flooding in Texas, Arkansas, and the Pacific Northwest, drought across the western part of the country, wildfires in California, and a major winter storm that impacted specialty crop producers in the South. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Join us as we celebrate 3 decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions. Connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Next week, the Senate will be in session and the House will return to Washington in February. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.